airports. Italy's government has recently sold a minority stake of the successor of the country's flagship carrier Alitalia to Germany's Lufthansa. However, the European Commission has not approved the deal yet, a decision that has left the Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni puzzled.
I'm afraid the EU only wants to transfer more Italian slots to Germany's Lufthansa. Having said that, the deal is not valid, as there is no discontinuity between the old and new national airline. An Italian judge has ruled the position of Brussels on the deal non-binding, and us workers should be rehired.
Former Alitalia workers believe that Brussels has been planning for years to slim down the European airline market to only three major players: British Airways, Air France, and Lufthansa. Max Civili, Rome.
When the name of the Jenin refugee camp is mentioned, the first thing that comes to mind is a stronghold for resistance against the Israeli occupation. It has long been seen as the center of Palestinian resistance. Created in the aftermath of the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands in 1948, the Jenin refugee camp was established in the early 1950s in the north of the occupied West Bank. The camp is less than half a square kilometer, according to the United Nations. It's home to almost 12,000 residents.
Jenin refugee camp is a great part in our occupied homeland, Palestine. We're speaking about fighters and resistors. We're speaking about a great popular incubator. We're speaking about brave young men as if they are coming from another planet. They have their own necessities of steadfastness. They have a great ability to fight this Israeli occupation. Different components in their life have led to this determination. First, their ancestors were forced out of their towns in 1948. And second, they're still holding to their right of return.
In 2002, during the Second Intifada, Jenin refugee camp was the scene of one of the deadliest large-scale raids by the Israeli military. 60 Palestinians were killed and 250 others were wounded, while hundreds of homes were completely destroyed and more than a quarter of the camp's population were displaced. More than 20 years later, it seems the battle is not over. Last July, Israeli forces raided Jenin refugee camp, but this time, the heavy clashes and exchange of fire forced the Israeli military to retreat in 2 days, leaving 12 Palestinians killed. The military said then the main aim of the operation was targeting Palestinian fighters and capturing their ammunition. Palestinians say Israel had committed war crimes in the refugee camp in an effort to prevent future resistance and bringing down the Jenin Brigade, the newly formed resistance group that's comprised of fighters from different Palestinian armed groups.
What really unites us here in the Jenin refugee camp is not the Palestinian groups, but what unites us is this refugee camp and family closeness. We all live here as one big family. We stand together against the Israeli occupation and against anyone hostile to us.
This is how those resistance fighters think. They are young men living in the camp. I can describe each one of them as a phoenix. They're brave young men insisting on the challenge with simple equipment, personal pistols, explosive devices, and they caused the Israeli occupation great losses.
Israeli military used drones, bulldozers, and hundreds of troops in its army operation as regime troopers hunted down fighters who had grown increasingly bold. Israeli officials thought the regime's military would succeed in breaking the safe haven of the camp. However, they were wrong.
During the Al-Aqsa Intifada, resistance was strong in the refugee camp. The camp has so long been a center for the resistance fighters. With the accumulations, all the raids and destruction and killings establish a struggle in the camp, a non-stop struggle. This means a generation lives and a new generation comes. They are people who reject humiliation and reject all forms of oppression. The residents know the path has always been thorny and difficult, but that's why the people of Jenin will always remain their spearhead in the face of the occupation.
not only for its residents, but for all the Palestinians. The refugee camp, with its roaring of alleyways and dilapidated buildings adorned with banners bearing the portraits of martyrs, will keep Palestinians recalling their pain and their long history of resistance and fighting. Despite the non-stop Israeli operations in the Jenin refugee camp, the camp continues to be considered a symbol of Palestinian armed resistance. Residents of the camp argue that the latest killings and destruction have not only failed to weaken the Palestinians' resolve, but also helped to increase their resistance and steadfastness. Mona Qandil, Occupied Jenin refugee camp.
The Muslim world has dealt with its fair share of natural disasters over the years, but few would have expected to see the sheer scope of devastation caused by a week of horror across North Africa. Earthquakes, floods, and natural wildfires consuming everything in their path and laying waste to the environment around them.
The first disaster was the horrific earthquake that hit Morocco, a 6.8 magnitude quake which struck at around 11 p.m. local time on the 8th of September. Aftershocks followed on Wednesday the 13th, temporarily hampering rescue efforts there. At least 2,800 people were killed and over 300,000 people remain affected. 1 week on and the humanitarian needs remain incredibly great there. Then there was Storm Daniel, which crashed down on Libya, leading to the collapse of two dams in the city of Derna. The United Nations said in a report released on Sunday that the death toll from the devastating floods that hit that Libyan city, well, that sits at around 11,300 people, although those figures are disputed, with at least another 10,000 people who have still remained missing there. Aid workers fear disease and other crises loom on the horizon, and that will likely add to the toll.
Moroccans continue to live in fear of the inevitable aftershocks while trying to dig through and recover the bodies of the many thousands still missing.
It's God's will. I was in the kitchen with my daughter-in-law while both my husband and my son were sleeping. When the roof fell on them, they were killed, trapped under the rubble, and nobody could save them. It was God's will.
The violent storms which battered Libya could have been more costly in human life than the tragedy in Morocco. As an entire city, Derna, was overrun, thousands again died in the raging waters, with some claiming the death toll could reach as high as 20,000.
We took the families from the first floor to the fourth floor, and then from here we saw the buildings drift. And we saw Derna completely immersed. In just 10 minutes, the city became submerged. At 5:30, as light came, Hamza and Malik went down to inspect the street, and they told us to come down from the second floor to the C Street and not to go out to the side of the valley. We went down and saw a terrifying sight. People are dead in the streets, cars are destroyed, and homes have collapsed.
The wildfires of Algeria have thankfully been less costly, with no reports of fatalities surfacing. This was the exact same region hit with fires in July, causing the deaths of at least 30 people. Despite these hardships and the immense trauma caused to the victims, these Muslim-majority countries consider these calamities a test of faith and endurance, a natural part of this life.
All the Egyptian people offer their condolences and express their grief to the people of Libya and Morocco. We are offering any assistance that we can provide. Egypt already sent support because the Egyptian people and military are willing to show solidarity with people all around the world, not just Arabs.
As the rescue efforts continue, Muslims across the globe have been sending not just charity, but their prayers too, in the hope of sending strength to the people most afflicted with these biblical-style disasters.
The first days of fall in Iran coincides with the reopening of schools after a three-month-long summer vacation. It marks the start of learning, finding new friends, and getting to read new books. Other than that, students say coming to school paves the way to reach their goals and dreams.
We all have goals that we must strive for. Coming to school is one of the steps that we must take to reach those goals. School provides us with an environment where we can use the lessons studied there to improve and succeed in university. I want to study architecture in university.
They say that even though giving up on their long summer vacation is hard, going to school for them means pursuing their desired future.
It's hard to give up on summer vacation, but I'm doing it to get what I want. I would like to study computer and programming in one of the best universities. I really like this field, and I think as a woman, I can achieve my goals. Why not? We have many women who have studied in the best fields and universities.
Melika is a student who has reached high academic achievements despite her young age. She is a young inventor.
I have an invention that can solve the sensory motor problem of patients with spinal cord injury. In addition, I have worked with various universities and medical students on the treatment of stomach cancer, which has been fruitful.
Iran, a country with high position in scientific rankings, owes many of its achievements to the boys and girls whose eagerness to learn has these days brought them to school. Farzan Ashuryun, Tehran.
Israel has resealed its crossings with Gaza for the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur, or Day of Atonement. There is pedestrian crossing in northern Gaza, and the Kerem Shalom commercial crossing in southern Gaza will remain shut until Tuesday. The closure of the crossings will only increase the suffering of more than 2 million Gazans who have been under a crippling blockade since 2007. The impoverished coastal sliver already suffers from high poverty and unemployment rates. Experts say that sealing the crossings during Jewish holidays will further complicate the situation and is part of Israel's racist policies against the Palestinians.
We strongly condemn this outrageous move. Israel uses Jewish holidays as a racist excuse to make the people of Gaza suffer and deprive them of their most basic rights. The goal of closing the crossings is to further tighten the blockade, destroy the economy, and to keep the people of Gaza as prisoners in a big prison.
Every year, the apartheid Israeli regime seals the crossings with Gaza for an average of 100 days for Jewish holidays and other occasions, while keeping its crossings with Egypt and Jordan open on the same occasions.
Israel has systematically closed the border crossings between Gaza and Israel, Erez and Kerem Shalom, which has inflicted more hardship and more burdens on the Gaza community. In the beginning of the Jewish holiday, that they close the border crossings with the Gaza Strip mainly, and they keep it open with other areas, like they keep their border crossing open with Egypt, with Jordan.
Experts believe that only the complete lifting of the inhumane Israeli siege and the permanent reopening of all crossings can end the deteriorating humanitarian situation in the tiny coastal territory.
Israel is suffocating the Gaza Strip with its inhumane policies. We demand the full lifting of the blockade and the permanent reopening of all crossings. Israel aims to harm the people of Gaza, including patients and workers, as much as it can, under any pretext it can find.
Tel Aviv's racist policy during Jewish holidays is considered by many as a grave violation of international laws and norms. Israel says that it will keep the crossings with Gaza sealed during Jewish holidays for security reasons. But human rights groups reject Tel Aviv's argument, asserting that such measures are only aimed at tightening the blockade. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Iraq started its war on Iran 43 years ago today. In the beginning hours, Iraqi bombs rained down on military bases and airports of the Islamic Republic. Within a few hours, a retaliatory operation was planned by Iran's air forces, codenamed Kaman 99. A gathering was held in Tehran on Saturday to mark the anniversary of this operation during the Sacred Defense Week.
The Air Force, as a force with rapid reaction capacity, intervened in a critical situation and bombed the enemy's bases. The experts in the world believe that our Air Force is not capable of confronting the enemy, but 140 airplanes carried out this operation, along with other airplanes that took pictures of the enemy's headquarters.
Iraq deployed 192 warplanes to attack 10 bases and airports on the first day of the war, but Operation Kama 99 destroyed Saddam's ominous dream of conquering Tehran in just 6 days.
This operation turned the Ba'athist forces' dream of conquering Tehran in 6 days into a bitter nightmare. After 3 days, the Iraqi Air Force had no ability to confront the Iranian Air Force. And from here, Iranian skies became safe and the ground for the liberation of Khorramshahr was prepared.
Participants in the event also talked about the West's intervention in the war in support of Iraq.
The Western countries supported Saddam to attack Iran with the aim of destroying the Islamic Revolution. Saddam initially attacked the Air Force because he knew how important they were.
This operation and other operations that took place during the 8 years of Saddam's imposed war against Iran show the strength and solidity of the Islamic Republic, which has been achieved by the committed and expert forces of the country. Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the most merciful.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
France has been plagued by nationwide protests against systemic racism and police violence. This comes after another unarmed young man of color was killed by police during a routine traffic stop. Now, Paris alone saw over a week of riots against the police killing and controversial law which police have seized upon to justify what protesters are calling state violence and summary executions. The controversial law and its consequences for minorities in France is the topic of this episode of Your Spotlight. Joining us now for our program is Mahmoud Refat, international relations expert, joining us from Paris. And Mr. Abiyomi Ezekiwe, researcher and political analyst, joining us from Detroit, Michigan. Gentlemen, welcome to the program, to our spotlight here, to the both of you. I'm going to start with you, Mr. Abiyomi Ezekiwe. We've seen minorities in France, sir, screaming racism and systemic violence by police for years, mostly Muslim citizens or those of African descent. Your initial thoughts on how pervasive you think the problem is and what authorities you feel in France have done to address it?
It is pervasive. And according to statistics that have been released over the last several months, dozens of people have been killed by the French police over the last several years. Last year, there were over 20 people who were killed. There were others who were wounded as well. And I don't think the residents of France would be up in arms about this if it was not a serious problem. We saw just 2 months ago mass rebellion demonstrations in several cities, not just Paris, but all across France in response to the brutal police killing of Nahil, who was of North African descent. So I think this is a serious problem in France, and if the government does not address it, it's going to deteriorate even further.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Mahmoud Refat, welcome to the program, sir. Your initial thoughts on how demonstrators, we know, they're taking particular aim at this particular law that came into effect in 2017, the 435.1 of the Internal Security Code, which extends the possibility for forces of law and order to shoot in the event of a simple suspect's refusal to comply. Your initial thoughts on this law that protesters are going after and the fact that it's targeting mostly black French citizens and those of Arab descent?
Well, in order to understand the French police functioning, we need to go back to the history, to the French Revolution. The French Revolution, which is shaping the face of actual France, was launched severally and with police and security mentality. And from her, and according to that, even cities of France were constructed in order to liquidify or to make easier for police to be liquid in the cities and to surround manifestations. When you see majority of cities, and let's take example Paris, you will find Paris as main circle, main roundabout, which is the center, plus the Châtelet, and from here the avenues to go through, and each avenue is to end by another roundabout, and each roundabout other avenues to go through, and so on. This construction of the cities reflect lots of, or the biggest part of the French mentality. I mean, the governance of France since more than 200 years, since the French Revolution. It's to make the police dominant at any time. That means using the force, depending on this force in order to oppress manifestations. And that made big accumulation and big heritage until we reach it today. Well, in 16th, 15th, French police had also big waves of movements and actions that were subject of media. And until today, we are talking about throwing Algerians in the Seine River until today. Something happened more than 60 years ago, almost. But today, it has been legalized. These actions have been legalized by the code itself. The law, and with years, laws, especially under the administration of President Macron, the police was given lots of laws to protect its violence and brutality, and breaches of rules and breaches of the European Union rules in general. By the way, the European Union has a code of ethics for the practice of the police and has rules to be applied on all European countries, mostly only France, who is somehow outside of this of these rules because of guarantees and protections were given by laws to the French police. Again, the French police, to understand that, we need to understand the whole construction of France and the French Revolution, which shaped the actual face of France we have physically on hand.
Thank you, Rifat. Mr. Rifat, that's a very interesting perspective, and that takes us way back to France's colonial past. Mr. Ezekwe, this IGPN, the Inspector Responsible for Investigating Police Misconduct, released its annual report on use of force by officers. It found last year 38 people died as a result of police action. 22 were shot dead. From those 22, 13 involved cases of someone refusing to comply with a simple police order, most of them Black and Arab descent. Now, there are three such killings the previous year in 2021 and two in 2020. Your thoughts on where this trajectory is headed?
It illustrates clearly that the situation is getting worse for people of color, poor and working class people in France. In regard to the French Revolution, a lot of the reforms that came out of the revolution were eventually overturned. For example, the abolition of slavery was revoked in regard to the occupation of Haiti. And France fought a long war to maintain Haiti as a colony. They were defeated in 1804. Same situation with their colonies in Africa. Algeria, they occupied for over 130 years. In May of 1945, they slaughtered thousands of Algerians for protesting in celebration of the French victory in World War II, but also calling for Algerian independence. During the revolution between 1954 and 1962, over a million people were killed by the French colonial forces. So they have a history of brutal repression. And now with the economic crisis that exists in France, the police are being utilized as the front line of defense against a crumbling state in France, headed by Emmanuel Macron and the prime minister there as well.
Thank you. And Mr. Rifat, we know that France has a whole lot to say about other countries when they have volatile protests, when they're simply riots. There were riots in Iran. The French president called them protests. And now they're having riots in France because of this law. But you see the French, they're not so vigilant when it's taking place on their own soil, how they label it and how they address it systemically.
Well, this is the norm of the international relations. You know, for example, when the United States oppressed severely the movement of Let's Occupy Wall Street, if you remember that, like one decade ago, it was real violence of international law and guarantees of freedom of speech. And despite that, the American media at that time, I'm just giving the example of the American here, not only with the French, to show it's worldwide exchange when it comes to this point. At that time, American media did not criticize the American police so much. And the politicians did not criticize the police, the American police, so much, despite this, the severe behaviors of the American police. The same in France. While when there's crash with a country, with another nation like Iran, no, anything will happen in Iran will be put in image of the end of the world. While, let me give you a direct example. American politicians, French politicians, I mean, Occidental politicians, have been talking a lot about Chinese behaviors against Muslims and Chinese persecution of Muslims, etc. Despite, just beside China, in India, there is more horrible and more terrific behaviors and adopted officially by the government of Prime Minister Modi. But India is a good friend and good ally of the West. That's why India almost never mentioned in any criticize of that. So this is the norm in the international relations. When something, if you are my friend, I will close my eyes and I will not say anything about what's happening on your land. If you are not my friend, I will try and I will do my best to use the smallest and most minor things can happen in your on your land to give impression that you are a monster, you are giving up the human values, you are breaking the international law, you are outside of the United Nations regulations and rules, etc. So this is the international relation game, which all experts are, or all specialists of international relations are familiar with today. We no longer focus on that a lot. It's just political announcement, which at the end of the day did not help a lot, neither build a real situation or get real benefit more than to be media propaganda.
And Mr. Thank you, Mr. Rifat. Mr. Ezekiel, and to Mr. Rifat's point, if you put a law on the books that is getting this kind of result, is blasted by rights group and is targeting a specific sector of your society unjustly and disproportionately, why do you allow it to persist?
Because obviously they have an agenda to suppress the African and Muslim and working class communities in France. That is their agenda. And it's the same thing in the United States, in Britain. All these three leading Western industrialized countries have a similar problem with police misconduct and police brutality. It was quite interesting when the rebellions were taking place in France just several months ago in response to the police killing of Nahil. Macron framed the demonstrations as being a result of juvenile delinquency. He accused the parents of those involved in those rebellions as being irresponsible. Rather than address the underlying social problems that prompt these type of unrest to break out in France, I think it's an avoidance on the part of the French government. They do not want to accept that their society is institutionally racist and that the police are brutal, and they need to be disarmed, and they need to be dismantled and reorganized. And the same situation is true in the UK as well as the United States.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you, sir. And I want to put that, Mr. Ezekiel's words to you, Mr. Rifat. If Paris, Washington, and London, they proclaim to be the champions of human rights throughout the world. They try to preach to the rest of us what it means to be equal, just, democratic. They try to teach us all about human rights. But when the impetus has to fall upon their own people, upon themselves, upon their own backyard, why do they have such a hard time keeping it clean?
Well, let me just highlight a very important point. Yeah, there was lots of remarks concerning the French police functioning. That's true. But what is making these remarks to appear so much is the nature of the French society, the history also, which is building the nature of the French personality. The French personality is naturally rebel personality, is not obedient at all personality in front of the governments, in front of the governor. It's not obedient society. I do not want to specify another or compare to another societies, but let's say to generally to the north of Europe, more north of Europe and Scandinavian countries. These countries, for example, when you go there, once the governor, the prime minister or the cabinet of prime minister or the parliament or whatever took a decision and there is a new rule, new law to increase the age of retirement, for example, society will be obedient. There is kind of trust between the society and their governor. While the French specificity in Europe, which is very close to Italian, but more in France, we can notice that French society, not obedient, not that submissive in front of its governor. And that highlights a lot and put lots of light on the reactions of the police, how the police behave in France. So that's why the French police is always mentioned in the news, because also of reactions coming from the French society itself. Me, myself, from Arabic origin, I can confirm, yeah, there is somehow some remarks also concerning the and misconduct concerning the discrimination, yeah. But not as much as it's described. The French police is severe and brutal against all the society, all continents in the society. Maybe a little bit more against Arabs or black, that's true, maybe, especially in some areas, in some cities, like in Paris, when we go to Paris, some areas were highly populated by Arabs and Africans, Marseille, some, but this is really minor comparing to the French brutality with against the French manifestations of les gilets jaunes, the yellow vests, for example. They are not Arabs, they are not black, they are real French people coming from French descendancy since hundreds of centuries. And despite that, we saw them being massacred by the police. And we do not have exact numbers of victims, by the way, about victims of yellow vests, for example. We do not have real exact numbers. All numbers are showing are highly doubted by manifestants themselves who witnessed that some of their colleagues even were killed. So the French brutality is against all ingredients of the society, unfortunately.
And that's a really interesting point that I want to put to you, Mr. Ezekwe, because it's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? For the French personality, Mr. Refaat said, is rebellious against authority in general, and their protests are friendly as a result. But did that come as a result of state violence inflicted upon them by authority to them to make them rebellious, or did the state become authoritative due to their rebellion nature? Because in the U.S., you have something completely different. You have protesters out that are victims, literally victims of police violence, and you cannot really say that they caused the police to create that violence against them.
Normally, people will not go out and demonstrate and rebel if there's no just cause for their actions. And the point is well taken. The Yellow Vest movement was met with severe repression. At the beginning of this year, unions and the student unions who had rolling strikes that raised the age of to receive full retirement, those demonstrations as well were met by vicious police brutality, and they went ahead anyway. the French government and ram through the law, even without a vote of the National Assembly. So this does not look good for the French ruling class. And I think that they're becoming more and more exposed. What is going on now in West Africa? They were just ordered to leave Niger. They claim now they're going to pull out. So I think all across the world, people are beginning to see France in a different light, not as the origins or the originators of the French Revolution of liberty and fraternity and so forth, but as a ruling class that is seeking to maintain its hegemony, whether it's in France, in Africa, or wherever else they feel they have national interests.
Thank you. And final thoughts I'm going to put to you, Mr. Refat. You close the program with, if you want to basically track down Mr. Ezekiwe's narrative there and yours, it doesn't seem like French authorities have too much care to address this problem.
Well, there have been lots of attempts in order to modify the functioning of the French last two decades, but these attempts are were not successful simply as because the government, the state, did not support them. France is very, very, very concentrated regime, and government doesn't support a project, this project will never see the light one day seriously. It will exist on the media, but it will never be applied on the ground. At the end of the day, every single thing in France is in hands of the governor, of the authorities, the civil society, the NGOs, etc. They exist a lot, but they are exist to express their wishes. But to be applied, it must be adopted somehow officially, on official level. That's why it never been adopted. Meanwhile, the contrary has been adopted, is to give more protection to the police. For this reason, the attempts of making serious reform in the functioning of the French police have been not successful, and I do not expect that to be successful for more two, three decades minimum from now.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us in the program. Pleasure to check in with both of you. Mr. Mahmoud Refat there joining us from Paris, and Mr. Abiyomi Ezekiwe joining us from Detroit, Michigan. And viewers, that brings us to the end of the segment of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, for the past few weeks, we have been explaining Surah Qalam, the number 68 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. Revealed in Mecca, it has 52 ayahs and opens a single discrete Arabic letter, Noon, and the divine oath by the instrument of Qalam or the pen, as well as all knowledge that people are able to preserve and communicate thereby. It enumerates the noble characteristics of the Prophet of Islam and exhorts him to patience and steadfastness while rejecting the accusations of his foes who try to mock him as insane. It exposes the vices of the enemies of Islam and, referring to the inevitability of resurrection and final judgment, warns them of divine wrath. A statement from the Prophet speaks of divine rewards for those who recite Surah Qalam regularly, while the Prophet's sixth infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, says recitation of this surah, whether in the obligatory or supererogatory ritual prayers, shall be immunity from the pressures of the grave for an observant Muslim. We continue from where we left you in our last episode of this series, and here is Ayah 48.
فاصبر لحكم ربك ولا تكن كصاحب الحوت إذ نادى وهو مكظوم.
So submit patiently to the judgment of your Lord, and do not be like the man of the fish, who called out as he choked with grief. If you might recall, in our last episode of this series, while explaining the previous ayahs of this surah, we had said that those guide people and impart religious, spiritual, and ethical values to them should not ask them anything in return as salary or reward, but there is no harm in accepting reasonable presents. We had also said that knowledge of the unseen is only known to the Almighty Creator and to those of His upright servants to whom He has revealed part of it, and definitely not to the soothsayers, fortune tellers, and those who claim to have dreams of coming events. The ayah that we recited to you now commands the Prophet of Islam and the believers to be patient in the face of persecution by the disbelievers, and while referring to the account of Prophet Jonah, tells them to desist from haste. It should be noted that Prophet Jonah, tired of the obstinacy of the people who denied his mission and continued to commit sins, made haste in invoking divine wrath on the disobedient nation as a result of abandoning his mission and boarding a ship to travel to some other place. He was chastised by the all-merciful Lord and was swallowed by a whale when thrown into the sea by his fellow travelers, who, fearful of the turbulent waters, cast lots and pushed him overboard. Now, in the stomach of the huge fish, his heart was imbued with sorrow, and he fervently beseeched forgiveness and begged for deliverance. This ayah teaches us that, number one, those who guide people ought to be patient and extremely clement, without losing hope in divine mercy or resorting to any hasty step that is detrimental for fellow humans. And number two, prophets were often admonished by the Almighty Creator and reminded of their duties whenever this was required. Now let us listen to ayahs 49 and 50 of the same surah.
لولا أن تداركه نعمة من ربه لنبذ بالعراء وهو مذموم فاجتباه ربه فجعله من الصالحين.
Had it not been for a blessing that came to his rescue from his Lord, he would surely be cast on a bear's shore while he was blameworthy. So his Lord chose him and made him one of the righteous. Prophet Yonah's prayer and repentance were accepted in the divine court. And had it not been for God's grace, he would have been cast out in the state of being blameworthy. The Almighty, however, forgave him, and the whale was commanded to cast him out on a deserted shore. As is clear from Ayah 50, the All-Merciful Lord made him one of the righteous servants and vested him once more with the obligation of guiding his people. He returned to his people, and they all believed in him and were granted divine bounties. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, God admonishes even his prophet if they show an iota of negligence in carrying out their duties. Number two, prayers and penitence, when accepted in the divine court, save us from punishment and calamities. And number three, sinners and transgressors who repent sincerely should never lose hope in divine mercy, and are provided ample respite to seek forgiveness by awakening their conscience. In conclusion of this week's episode, we invite you to listen to the last two ayahs of Surah Qalam, that is 51 and 52.
وَإِن يَكَادُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَيُزْلِقُونَكَ بِأَبْصَارِهِمْ لَمَّا سَمِعُوا الذِّكْرَ وَيَقُولُونَ إِنَّهُ لَمَجْنُونٌ وَمَا هُوَ إِلَّا ذِكْرٌ
Indeed, the faithless almost devour you with their eyes when they hear the reminder and they say, "He is indeed crazy." Yet it is just a reminder for all the nations. These closing ayahs of Surah Qalam resume the points mentioned in the opening ayahs of this surah regarding the false ascription of insanity to the Prophet of Islam by the pagan Arabs, who would almost cause his death with their evil eyes upon hearing the recitation of the Noble Quran, which is indeed a reminder, and they falsely claim that he is crazy. Ayah 52 says that the Quran is but an awakening and a reminder for all nations with its flawless wordings that none can match and its timeless wisdom, full of glad tidings to the believers as well as necessary admonishments. From these ayahs, we learn the following points. Number one, the enemies of Islam are hell-bent on tarnishing and destroying the luminous image of the Prophet through ascribing falsity to him. Number two, the enemies target the Noble Quran and the Prophet through propaganda in a vain bid to deceive believers and raise doubts in their minds. And number three, as the final heavenly scripture for the guidance of all mankind, the Noble Quran is a universal reminder to awaken the entire mankind. Undoubtedly, the current problems of Muslims have their roots in negligence and abandoning teachings of this divine book.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Your headlines for this hour: Israeli forces have shot and killed another Palestinian youth during a raid in the occupied West Bank. People have taken to the streets in